Many people thought the Share Your Embarrassment tour was over, but it was just dormant. We are really excited to announce that right now, tickets are on sale for the streaming Cyboctacular. We filmed our Hollywood show last year, and it's going to be streaming starting May 16th and available for a couple of weeks after that to anyone that holds a ticket. And if you have a Max Fun membership, you can get your ticket at a discount. Just check your inbox for an email for Max Fun with that code. If you aren't and would like to see the show, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets today. These shows are really fun. We put a lot of work into high-quality production values. And if you get a VIP ticket, we can even meet face-to-face over the internet. Get your tickets today at greatestgentour.com, and we'll see you on May 16th.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I am Benjamin R. Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica. Ben, you didn't see me do, like, finger guns on that one, but that's what I was doing.
I heard you do them.
Yeah. You know, sometimes you can hear a smile over the radio or the phone. Did you hear my finger guns?
I could hear them. I could hear them waving around in the air. Adam, it's been a long time since we've done mutually assured card destruction. Do you want to unbury that bit?
Oh, I kind of do. I got to run downstairs to get them cards, though.
Get them cards.
You've got the con.
Oh, fuck, what do I do?
The game is a five-card stud. The game is exceedingly simple. Part of this is just the card there.
Time to pluck a pendulum.
Had to run downstairs to get them. Still very sore from yoga. I'm restarting my yoga practice, and a fun thing happened yesterday where the instructor was like, you may feel something interesting during this stretch. And I was like, there is no other place where interesting is code for pain, like a yoga studio, right?
No. Yeah, if I go unyoged for more than a month, I'm always in pretty bad shape the next day.
Yeah.
But once you've done it like twice in a row, you feel like pretty indestructible.
Yeah, it's good. Enjoy
it. All
right,
let's rip into these fuckers.
All right.
I have to confess that while you were away, I launched one of our Previas into space and hit it with a dozen torpedoes.
Oh!
I didn't know what to do. You left me with the con. I can't deal with that kind of responsibility.
We had one to burn.
No SIGs in this first one. I've got a cool one for cause and effect.
I got Cupid. Did you get that one yet with Worf in the hat?
I think I do have that one.
It looks like a magazine cover, and the biggest story is the issue with hats.
Hey, I got one for the episode we're reviewing today, Ship in a Bottle.
What? That's never happened.
Yeah. Moriarty standing against a hollow grid. Oh, and I have one for The Big Goodbye, which is a fun noir depiction of Beverly in a period costume.
Fun. I'm two packs in. No cigs. I think I might be diving for a while, given that...
What am I, three behind? Three packs behind in our power ranking?
Yep. As I recall.
Got one for ethics. The famous Worf wants to commit seppuku episode.
Just another day for Mr.
The
Worf.
The Dauphin, the episode where Wesley gets a hot date, who turns out to be a werebear.
That was a fun one. Wesley's so unlucky in love.
Poor kid.
Whoa. I have a limited edition signed card.
Damn it.
By Juan Ortiz himself. Like, this is not the foil signature. This is an actual pen on card signature.
What?
This is a... So, like, I know we've both gotten these cards before where there's, like... there's a little bit of an embossment to it, and the card is a little thicker than the other cards.
I had that for Aquiel.
Yeah, this is actual, like, blue pen ink on Suddenly Human. And it says this limited edition autograph card was personally signed by Juan Ortiz. Damn. And the card is JOA 78. So there must be a whole set of these that have been hand signed. I win again. How many packs did that take? 1, 2, 3, 4 packs.
All right, I have 3 packs open. My third pack has cards for the Royale and Second Chances. That there's 2 Commander Rikers episodes, so not
like
a total loss.
Yeah, that's a good one.
All right, this is pack 4. This could at least keep me from slipping if there's something in it.
I love thinking about that writer's room pitch for the one with 2 Rikers. The guy in the corner is like, so we all know Commander Riker is amazing, but what my story presupposes is, what if there were 2?
Fuck, I have another pack of just cards.
Keep diving.
You've got Schizoid Man, fun stylized picture of Worf and Alexander for New Ground. Alright, pack 5. I mean, the good news is I'm getting a lot of packs open.
Gotta get them packs.
Hey, here's a special card.
Hooray!
It is an embossed foil version of the Juan Ortiz signed card for Too Short a Season.
Oh, Space Irish.
Yeah. No, that's Up the Long Ladder.
Oh, which one is this?
This is the one with Admiral Jameson, the guy that's like de-aging himself.
One of the greats.
Yeah. Some of the worst loaf in the history of loaf.
It's real Hall of Fame loaf right there.
Yeah.
People have asked us what we're going to do when Next Gen is over, if we're going to do any special episodes where, like, maybe we do our awards episode.
We look back on the series.
I feel like Loaf Hall of Fame is a great segment for that.
Yeah, I don't hate the idea of doing, like, a retrospective episode before we move on to Holes in Space, etc.
We've already done Clip Show. It doesn't get any worse than that. Award Show is far, far better, I would say.
Yeah. So I have slipped to 4 packs behind. It's really a game. it's going to be a Pyrrhic game, right? Because we probably have roughly the same number of special cards in each box.
Yeah, it's just the degree. It's how we judge each other's special cards. Like, one of us could get a real barn burner.
Yeah. I mean, if there's a Jaeger in there.
If you pull a Whoopi,
hang it up.
A Whoopi is going to destroy me.
Yeah, I'd say that it's... would you say that Whoopi is the you know, ace of spades and...
I would say pulling a Whoopi is like the 1989 Upper Deck Ken Griffey Jr. card. Like, that is...
Is that the one where he shits in the toilet tank?
Friend, I don't know what you're talking about. It's the Billy Ripken fuckboy card. God, we're way in the weeds now.
Oh, we're doomed.
How's this one gonna go, Ben?
I say we just move right on to our episode.
Well, we got a real doozy here, Ben. It's season 6, episode 12. Ship in a bottle. It's another great playing holodeck episode, isn't it, Ben?
Data and Geordi are hanging out at Holmes's apartments in Baker Street.
Their captain has spent some time being tortured. 2 of his closest friends decide to just go play holodeck instead of being his friend.
Be by his side.
Yeah.
do whatever they can to help him recover from his ordeal.
He'll be fine.
An ordeal that never leaves anyone unscarred.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're having a laugh in the holodeck, and the character that they're about to accuse of murdering his brother, like, catches some object with his right hand, and Data is like, "Aha, you're left-handed." And Geordi's like, "Hey, Data, don't look now, but you're shitting on your own point." And they just kind of, like, go off into, like, they drop their ridiculous accents and go off into technobabble. Like, something is clearly wrong with the holodeck.
There seems to be a problem with the holodeck's spatial orientation systems.
London's greatest detective.
Freeze program.
Are they here for work or are they here for play? Because it seems like at this point they were doing a job. Like, something's wrong with the holodeck, so we got to play with the holodeck to figure out what's happening.
I mean, I think that they were doing, you know, like, they were playing Duck Hunt, and then it started glitching out, and they pulled the cartridge and tried blowing on it through their T-shirt.
To me, it felt like they were, like, two hot tub repairmen who could only test out if the bubbles worked by getting in the hot tub, you know? Geordi's like, the butt jet isn't bubbling the way it should.
These pipes have been serviced for years. Must have been a non-union job.
God, they leave so much back hair every time they test it out. It's really gross.
Good thing they got Barkley, though. Barkley...
These guys have the greatest thing in the world, which is they call up tech support, and tech support is, like, there as they're leaving.
Deja vu.
There must have been a glitch in the Matrix diodes.
I thought Barkley would be banned from the holodeck, and... I think he was, because that's the only explanation for how excited he is to be back on a holodeck inside an arch again.
Ho, Reg.
I'm sorry, Commander. I'm just on my way to the holodeck.
I mean, dude definitely sounds like he was jerking it when they call him up.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude's really into deck. r/deck is what he's been looking at.
That takes him right over the line.
Yeah.
r/deck in 15 seconds.
He sort of has, like, a futuristic tongue depressor. Like that's what he's rolled into the holodeck with to fix this thing.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't need much. His hair is much better now.
Yeah, I guess. To who?
He starts, like, poking around, and he narrows the problem down to Sherlock Holmes stuff, and discovers that there's a big thing running in protected memory. And he launches it, and out in the center of the holodeck appears Professor Moriarty, the same actor and character from the episode Elementary, Dear Data. A deep callback.
A four-season callback, which is shocking. They don't talk about things that happened in the episode before. It's incredible.
Yeah, they are willing to call back this holodeck character, but not the fact that Picard has just been subjected to torture.
Moriarty's like, I've been in that fucking isolinear chip for 4 years, and it's kind of freaking me out. Where are we at on the mission W/R/T making me a real sentient person?
I want to leave the holodeck. I want to leave it right now.
Barkley's like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about, man. And Moriarty is justifiably pissed about this.
I have been stored in memory for God knows how long, and no one has given me a second thought.
Yeah, Moriarty should have been like, hey, guy, you were the entire computer for a while. You lived in the holodeck. Yeah. You know every inch of this computer system. You should know what I am.
If there's one guy who knows what Moriarty's been through, it's actually Scotty, who was stuck in that transporter buffer.
Yeah.
Moriarty seems fine, though, other than being a little pissed. He's like, I need to see the captain. I need to lecture him on this part of his performance evaluation.
This shit is horrifying, right? Like, to be trapped in there for 4 years without any way to interact with the outside world.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of a lot's happened in 4 years. Picard shows up with the action jacket. Moriarty's like, what the hell is that?
Picard is like, hey, listen, dude, like, I want to tell you all about my action jacket, but we've got some planets that are about to bump into each other, and I'm much more interested in that. And, you know, like, I assure you that people who know what they're doing are looking into your case, and I'm sorry that you were awake the entire time, but, like, I don't know what to say. Like, you're still a holodeck guy. There's nothing I can do about that.
He kind of gives him the whole, we realize you have your choice in holodecks, and we thank you for choosing Enterprise holodecks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's not like, sir, we oversold this holodeck and we need you to leave right now.
Moriarty is like checklisting him a little bit. He's like, well, didn't you elevate this problem to tech support, like, outside of Barclay? And Picard's like, yeah, like, Starfleet set up a whole holodeck lab with nothing but snowballs and books.
The god is working in shifts.
They just can't figure this thing out.
And that is, like, deeply unsatisfying in the way that it always is when you call tech support and they don't have a way to, like, turn a knob and your problem is fixed.
Yeah.
He feels very urgently that he has to get off this holodeck. One thing we neglected to mention was that, like, when Barclay agreed to go get the captain, he, like, flipped a switch and Moriarty disappeared. But the second Barclay left the room, Moriarty reappeared, you know, foreshadowing that he has some level of control over his existence that is heretofore unestablished. Mm-hmm. And so as this argument with Picard boils over, he's like, hey, asshole, like, I'm going to show you how wrong you are about this whole situation. I am aware of myself and what I am and my surroundings.
Cogito ergo sum.
And I think that by sheer force of will, I can step off this holodeck and maintain my matter cohesion or whatever. And he walks over to the door. And sure enough, he steps into the hallway and does not disappear.
Sort of a heavy moment. Because he knows the stakes. Picard has told him the stakes. You're going to walk outside that door and you're just gonna vaporize like this book.
Yeah.
Like, if only you were a snowball, you'd survive outside the holodeck.
Wasn't it the Dixon Hill episode where there were some gangsters that walk out of the holodeck and they sort of, like, disappear by fading up from the floor?
Yeah. Yeah, so we've seen it before. We know the stakes.
Yeah. I was wondering why the book behaved so differently.
I don't know. It sort of Q flashes out of frame. Maybe Q stole it.
Well, anyways, Moriarty walks off and everybody is fucking shocked. Like, they cannot believe their eyes. Like, Data, like, almost has a spasm when he sees this.
Yeah, because this is new life, right?
And new civilizations.
He has just basically announced to the universe that he is real.
I'm real, baby.
He's done the Pinocchio transition, right? He's a real boy. He's a real evil boy.
A real evil boy. Yeah, and so I think they, like, go to Six Bay, and the doctor does tricorder on him, and she's like, yeah, he's weird, but he's real. And he starts asking questions. He's like, what ocean is this ship in? Like, let's go up to the deck and take in the breeze. And Picard is like, oh, I actually need to break something to you, buddy. And does the classic Picard trick of taking somebody to a window to show them out.
Yeah, which is normally
what's happening outside the ship.
It's normally like a seduction technique for him. But, this is one of the few times you see him do it towards someone he's not sexually interested in.
Yeah. He does not want to bang Moriarty. And so, like, they sit down and Moriarty's like, okay, I'm out of there. Now you got to get my girlfriend out of there, and you got to let us go. Like, this is inhumane. What has happened to me is unacceptable, and you guys were totally asleep at the switch the entire time. It's not cool.
They build up the idea of this love interest over a couple of scenes. Like, initially, Moriarty's like, God, I love this girl so much.
She was designed to be the love of my life.
I think my mission is really to spring her from the holodeck prison, too. Because, like, it's great that I'm alive, but what I really, like, it's not going to mean much to me if I'm by myself. Like, I want to get my lady friend out so we can start living this life.
And I love that Picard is like, you know, making one supervillain real is one thing. Like, actively making a second supervillain real seems like a big problem. And Moriarty's like, no, she's just regular. She's not a supervillain at all.
There's so much buildup to her before we see her that I mean, I knew this wasn't going to happen because I started to remember this episode fairly quickly, but do you think they ever considered bringing Pulaski back? Because they really hit it off. Moriarty and Pulaski did back in the day.
Yeah.
And if his love interest...
was like modeled off of her?
Was modeled off of her, that would have been an awesome callback.
Yeah. Or Minuet, for that matter.
Yeah.
Either one would have been pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, we're not knocking the actress who ends up playing the Countess, but...
No, she does great.
Yeah. But, boy, like, to bring back a very salty Pulaski would be fantastic.
You know what hit me while I was watching this episode about Moriarty?
What's that been?
He's the captain that Admiral Fred Thompson is bossing around in Hunt for Red October.
Whoa!
Yeah. He's like, I don't like that guy wearing that uniform.
Good call.
Cut the boy some slack, Jimmy. I just felt the need to work that in there. He fell out of a helicopter in Vietnam. He was a Marine.
Let me tell you something, Ben. Fred is always welcome on our show.
Are you allowed to wear a Navy uniform if you used to be a Marine and are now attached to the CIA? Does that make it less bad for that captain?
God, I don't know.
Or is he still like, this fucking sucks?
That's...
Because Admiral Greer's the one that put him in it. He says, this is Greer's idea of low profile.
We got to save that for a different pod, Ben.
Yeah. Maybe our next Max Fun Drive, we put Red October back on the list as a potential bonus ep.
That is agreeable to me.
My love is a fever, long in jail for that, which longer nurseth the disease.
Picard agrees to, you know, move with all deliberate speed on getting Moriarty's sweet, sweet girlfriend off of the holodeck and heads up to the bridge to attend to Planet Crash.
Star Crash.
The ship is in this system because there are two gas giants that are going to bump into each other and potentially go nuclear and, like, form a new star. So it's going to be a pretty exciting event, and they're, you know, and a rare one. So they're really excited to observe it. And Picard is like, all right, let's send some probes out there. Look at these nice giant globes. Those are some big, sexy globes. And
now when you're making a new star, you're going to want to take two large gas giants and then smash them together real hard.
We recommend using a lot of support with two large gas giants. They can cause lower back problems if you are not supporting them properly. We recommend measuring both cup size and strap size.
Now, once they start banging into each other, you're going to want to get a safe distance. We recommend a half a light year. That way, when they form a neutron star, your starship won't be in danger of sure destruction.
Use safety goggles at all times.
And whatever you do, do not let a malevolent being from the holodeck take over your ship.
Man, that was a complicated one, Adam. It incorporated real things from the episode and also boob jokes, which have never touched the good folks at this old house a single time.
You know, once we start sexualizing this old house, you know we will have come full circle on that bit. You know it's ready.
Didn't we just, Adam?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
they're getting ready to launch some probes at these globes. But you know, some people are into, some people not.
Five probes is more probes than typically I could take.
Yeah.
In a globe banging situation.
Yeah. Worf is like, oh, I'm going to spray probes all over these globes. And and he hits the button and nothing happens. It's very anticlimactic.
Yeah. It happens to everyone, Worf, from time to time.
Don't feel ashamed. You know, this is, you know, sometimes it's when we realize our most exciting fantasies that we get a little stage fright, Worf.
Too much pressure. Turns out Worf, not a globes man.
He's more of a buns man.
He likes the craggly teeth.
Oh yeah, he made a special exception for his Parma Kai, didn't he? They can't launch these probes, and Data is like, "Hey, the command codes have all been rerouted. That's no good."
Yeah, and everyone sort of looks at Data like, when command codes are rerouted, I think suspect number one is Data.
Yeah, they're like, unreroute them, Data. And onto the bridge saunters Moriarty, and he's like, hey guys, got your ship.
You guys looking for this ship you're on?
Nice ship you got here. It'd be a shame if anything happened to it. And Picard is like, dude, you don't understand. Those globes need probes on them. Like, we got to finish the job. We're in danger. And he's like, well, maybe that is just the kind of motivation you'll need to help me with my problem.
Yeah.
And so they're fucked. Like, the ship is under his control. They have a great scene down in engineering where it's like Geordi and Barclay and Data doing like what every nerd sitting around in the living room with their friends does, which is trying to headcanon holodeck versus transporter.
Yeah.
It's so fun.
I wonder, what would happen if we tried to beam a holodeck object off the grid?
Oh, please. If I wanted to hear mindless droning, I'd befriend an air conditioner.
It delivers on this in the way that, like, Batman versus Superman fails to deliver on that nerd headcanon. Like, what would happen? Like, this is great. Like, they work out a reason why you can't beam something off the holodeck. And that's something that I'm sure... Can you imagine the fucking stack of letters this show received over the course of its now 6.5 years on television from people wondering why that has never been tried?
I feel like they needed 6.5 years to come up with a reason. Like, it wouldn't have surprised me if they used all 6.5 years to detail this.
Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah. But, like, you know what? Even in a non-specific way, I like seeing them work out a problem like this.
Yeah.
Like they actually go through a few iterations of why before resting on their conclusion. It's great. It's scientists doing science.
And they've come up with a hypothesis, and they don't know if it's going to work, so they're going to test it. So Data and Reg wander down to the holodeck with some jumbo crayons, and Reg goes in, and he's going to try and set them up around a chair and see if they can beam a chair off the holodeck. And when he goes into the room, the Countess Regina, who is Moriarty's girlfriend, is in there.
Have you come to see Mr. Holmes or perhaps Professor Moriarty?
Do you know him?
She's got a big floppy hat. She's got like a Guinan-sized hat. It may even be bigger than a Guinan hat. It's massive and it's got feathers.
You think Guinan has real hat envy in this situation?
Yeah, she would have to. And she is great. She is, as a character, like, smart and quick and charming. And
yeah,
the
she's
interaction...
She's definitely not like a damsel in distress. She has, like, real agency and is not just girl Moriarty, but a real interesting foil for his character.
This scene, I think, is my favorite scene in the whole episode because you get Barclay in there to do a job. And I think no matter what your job is, this has happened to you before, but you're like there to do a thing and you run into a person that you've got to help while doing this thing and you just hit it off, right? You hit it off and you are charmed by them in a really fun way. And the interaction between the Countess and Barclay, she totally just melts him in the best way. Like he sees her with Moriarty together and then she's alone with Barclay. And like he sort of breaks multiple times. Like his stoicism and professionalism are just sort of cracking. And he can't help but be charmed by her.
Traveling the stars.
You know about that?
She has been let in on the secret by Moriarty. So she's aware that she is a character in simulation and that this is an attempt to bring her and Moriarty into the real world. Or I guess just her into the real world.
Do you remember the last time we got... Well, I guess it maybe wasn't even the last time. But you've remembered moments in this show where they've written characters out of time that have experienced the future. I'm talking about, of course, $5 carnival guitar guy. Like,
let's see if the Braves are on. How do you cut on this TV?
Isn't it great that they wrote the Countess in like a smart, reasonable way? Like, She's not pie-eyed and googly about her circumstances. She's, like, smart and reasonable.
She's smart and reasonable, and yet she has this kind of Victorian bearing that she maintains in spite of everything. And it's really fun to watch that kind of play out in all the different contexts where she's...
It's a good combination.
Yeah. It's real fun stuff.
It is not... You know, what did you call it? Victorian bearing?
Yeah.
Boy, isn't there a difference between that and, like, country General Lee bearing? You know?
Indeed, Adam.
I am Locutus of all. You will assist us. I am Locutus of all. You are all.
They try to beam this chair off the holodeck, and it does not materialize on the pad. And that is not good news. So Data, like, wanders down to engineering to... I guess he's just going to gab with Geordi about it, but what he finds when he gets there is Captain Picard giving Geordi the command codes to try and reinitialize the ship, and it doesn't work. Like, he doesn't... Like, Geordi has been working on, like, backdooring Picard back into command after Moriarty took them out of it, and Data shows up like a minute too late to prevent Picard from doing this. But what he does do is toss something to Geordi, which Geordi catches with his left hand, which mimics the glitch that they observed in their cold open. And so Data puts it together that they've been in a simulation the entire time.
None of this is real.
They never left the holodeck after the first time they went in. The Moriarty character walking out the door was not walking out of the actual holodeck door. He was walking into a simulated Enterprise of his own design.
Which is, like, they've been incepted, basically.
Exactly. Like,
this is Star Trek Inception, and it's a sophistication in storytelling that you didn't think they were capable of. At least I didn't think. Like,
it's
wow.
It's a real, like, mind-blowing twist.
I love how they treat fake Geordi here. They're like, Geordi, why don't you go do some work or whatever? And Geordi, like, walks behind a curtain.
Yeah. He's like, all right, bye.
What is he doing back there? I was really hoping for fake Geordi to be like, what? I'm not real? Like, for him to suddenly get sentience the way that Moriarty did? How big of a problem would that have been if... if the fake Enterprise crew members suddenly felt like they were alive in the same way that Moriarty did.
Right. Well, I mean, it's fun because, like, Geordi behaves the way holodeck characters do behave when you start talking about them as holodeck characters. And
this doesn't look like anything to me. They sort of default to that.
They kind of reestablish that a bit in the cold open. And it's really fun to see one of our characters doing that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, real fun.
So now we go to outside the holodeck for the first time since this has been going on, and it's like Riker and Geordi negotiating on FaceTime with Moriarty, like a hostage situation.
Things are not what they seem, Chris.
Picard Data and Barclay are in the holodeck, incommunicado, as far as they know, unaware of what's going on. And Riker is trying to convince Moriarty to break the lock and let them out.
Release control of this ship.
And they're fucked because now Moriarty has Captain Picard's command code.
It's hard to tell who's more dangerous with those codes, Moriarty or Data.
Yeah. Because, like, at least Data you could, like, physically restrain, right?
Yeah, there's no, like, there's nothing there with Moriarty.
He can disappear into any part of the ship.
Yeah. I thought it was an interesting choice to, in the cut back and forth between Hollow Enterprise and Real Enterprise, I wonder if at any point they had thought to materially change, you know, either how it was lensed or how it was colored in a way that made the distinction more apt. Because, you know, like in The Matrix, you can tell that The Matrix is The Matrix because there's that green cast to it. And
right.
The real life has a different cast, but
a little bluer.
Welcome to the real world.
I appreciated the amount of trust the show gave the viewer in figuring that out, in cutting back and forth. Like, it looks materially the same in a way that can at times be confusing. But the confusion helps serve the story, which is also good.
It's perfectly done.
Yeah.
It's flawless. And so, like, the complication now is that the stakes have been raised because Moriarty has the command codes, but, you know, conversely, Picard and Data and Barclay are aware of the predicament they're in, and so they're working to get out of it from the other side of the holodeck door. They're, you know, digging from opposite ends of the tunnel, basically.
Yeah, yeah, they're trying to meet in the middle.
Well, so Picard goes to the Countess and is like, listen, you know, I want to help you, and, like, I think we probably can, but I have a lot of responsibility here. There's 1,000 people that could die if your boyfriend continues down this path. I'm going to get you guys out of here, but only after he relinquishes control of the ship to me. And she's like, that doesn't sound so much like a compromise as a threat. So what the deal? And he's like, well, that's like my best offer. So she explains this to Moriarty, and like his mind immediately makes this a, like, this is perfect.
I have them running around like rats in a maze.
Now I have all the leverage I need to get this done. And so what he's done is explained to Riker that that the theory here inside the holodeck is do something with the Heisenberg compensators. And so Riker, I guess, this is maybe a little thin, but somehow worked in the episode. That's like enough for Riker to work out what to do, which is that they beam Moriarty and the Countess out of the simulated world into the simulated Enterprise. Like, they think they're being beamed from the Baker Street apartment to the real Enterprise, but they are being beamed to the simulated Enterprise, and they're put in a shuttlecraft and sent on their way. And it turns out that is all a ruse.
They get the Scotty deal.
They do, yeah. They get a sweet Previa all to themselves. One of the big ones.
Yeah, the family truckster.
Wow, this is roomy.
I thought that this maybe it was like one area that wrote Moriarty a little dumber than he probably would have been. And I don't really know, I don't have a solution to this, but I sort of think that he would have been checking in with his reality frequently, given the con he was running.
Well, that's what Inception does so well with the top, is like, how do you know where you are for sure? And what this episode needed was a top.
It did.
Some sort of top device that told Moriarty, or at least communicated to the viewer, that Moriarty knew or did not know where he was. And and you're right, it seems a little bit thin that they were able to turn the exact table back on him in a way that they were originally turned to them.
Like, I don't think that it fails. I don't think this episode is ruined by that, but it does like enter your head and bump you a little bit. I think.
The button on the episode is Barclay pulling the chip that the simulation continues to run with. They have a little meeting in the conference room to talk about it, and Picard sort of says with some amount of wonderment that, you know, this thing can run forever. The simulation can run forever. They'll never know that it's not real. They've got sort of a battery and jumper cables hooked up to it so that if the power goes out, like, they won't lose the thing.
It's so macabre.
There's a little bit of a Twilight Zone ending to this. Like, it is also tragic. It is not a great ending. It is not a bad ending. But, like, he's in prison, and he doesn't know it. And is that okay? Like, he's no less alive than he was at the beginning of the episode. They agreed that he was alive.
It seems like it flies in the face of the morality of these people.
Exactly. Like, I don't think he deserves to be on someone's desk.
Where do they put that thing? Do they give it to the scientists that are working on the, like, bring this guy into reality? Like, they also sort of treat Moriarty like he's so reflexively villainous that he's too dangerous to be allowed into our world, even if we could find a way, which I feel like is a pretty debatable premise. Like, you know, I feel like I could be convinced, but I don't understand where they're coming from with that.
They double-crossed him and they left him alive. It's the con problem, you know? Like, you can't maroon him on SETI Alpha 6.
This is SETI Alpha 5!
And expect him to just stay there. Like, someone's going to boot up this program down the line, and there's going to be hell to pay when it happens. Right?
This would have been a fun movie.
Right? I agree.
Did you like this episode, Adam?
I did. Fun episode. And a challenging premise to make right in 42 minutes, you know? Like,
right.
It was cheesecake dense, you know? There was a lot of story making to do here. And
that is the thing that it really, like for all of Inception's, like, 2.5 hours or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like you get 90% of the fun of that in this, and it's less than half as long.
Right, because the whole thing falls apart if you don't know the rules to this game, and they're able to establish really quickly what those rules are in a really efficient manner. And if they're unable to do that at any point, I don't think the episode works.
Yeah. I also really like this episode. I think that it's not uncommon for holodeck peril to be a real snooze on this show.
Yeah.
And this is an example of it done very well.
Some of the best remastering on the show were these two globes banging. Pretty hot banging, I thought.
Yeah.
Looked good.
Some big globes.
Yeah.
I mean, made me want to produce a probe or two of my own.
Speaking of probes, Ben, has anyone sent any probes to us in our general area?
Let's see what is due for our chins, Adam.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, we have a couple of priority one messages here. Our first one is from Steve, John, and Matilda, and it's to Katie. It goes like this. Thanks for being a great mom. When the rascals are old enough to view this podcast, they will be much more thankful than they are now that they've never been trapped in a turbo lift, singing Frere Jacques, or stranded in a desert during a school run. And until then, we all love you and hope that this is the best Mother's Day. Better than all days. Everywhere. Well, that's a fun one. Happy Mother's Day, Katie. And happy Mother's Day to all the mothers in the crowd. I feel like we got plenty of moms out there.
A lot of people say that Mother's Day is a Hallmark holiday. I'm not one of those people. You will find my real doll creations. Come in all shapes, sizes, and ages.
In many ways, I feel like a mother myself, because without me, they wouldn't exist. So, in some ways, this is a day of celebration for me as well.
Happy Mother's Day to me.
Do we have another one, Adam?
We sure do. Ben, this message is from Stephen Theaker, and it is for Ranjna Theaker. And I really hope I pronounced that right. Message goes like this. 25 years ago, we started watching Star Trek The Next Generation together in the student common room at Reading University. And I'm so looking forward to saying hello to Jason Isaacs with you when the new series starts. You're my number one, and always will be. Happy 21st anniversary. P.S. You would love this podcast. Steven, you just sent this message out into the ether, hoping that it would find your wife. Wow.
I hope that the plan isn't like a Clockwork Orange forced viewing of this podcast. Because by the time you get here, man, wow, you've had to listen to a lot of Probes on Globes jokes.
That hot Probes on Globes action. Wow. 25 years. It's a big milestone. Congratulations, guys.
Well, if you would like to wish somebody a happy Mother's Day or anniversary or send any other message, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron to order one. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message. And we really appreciate everybody who sends them. So, thanks.
Thanks.
Darmok, Angelad, and Tanagra.
I've got to fly cross-country to visit our buddy Adam Ragusea today, and there have already been 2 flight delays on the outbound. And as I watch the delays get longer and my travel day get thrown into a shambles, I'm remaining chill. There's nothing I can do but wait, and I'm making my waiting a little better with a microdose gummy. That's because microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help me feel just the right amount of good. We've all seen those videos of people going crazy on airplanes. Well, this isn't that kind of dose at all. This is the kind of dose that makes a long delay at an airport feel a little more bearable. There are all kinds of other uses, and if you've ever considered microdosing, I'd encourage you to give the products from Lumi Labs a try. Get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com using the promo code SCARVS. Now, these products are available nationwide, and that URL is microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVS. And with that, you can save 30% and free shipping. Again, that's microdose.com, and the promo code is SCARVS.
Every morning when I hop out of bed, I get a couple of capsules of my Ritual multivitamin and a capsule of my Ritual Symbiotic Plus probiotic. I pop them in my mouth, wash them down with a bunch of water, and I know I've taken vitamins and supplements that are going to get my body off to a good start. And these are rigorously tested and validated by third parties for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. And they use scientific tools to select lower carbon packaging, prioritize sustainably sourced ingredients, and set ambitious climate goals. The Essential for Men is the quality multivitamin that I take from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scarves. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class.
Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
I did. I'm gonna give mine to a wordless security guy. At one point, there's like a cut down to Worf in the hallway with some lackeys, and they're trying to like bust through the holodeck door. And there's just a guy in the foreground with like a electronic pen, and he's touching it to different points on the force field that's keeping them out of the hallway. I don't know. It just made me laugh because I love the idea that he like tried one place and he's like, well, let me see if there's a hole over here. Nope. This is also a force field. How about here? Nope. Still a force field.
Ben, this is a double Shimoda because I chose the same guy. He's totally asked to mime, right? He's sort of miming with a chapstick. He's doing the box.
He sure is.
He's trapped in this box, Ben. Yeah. And the one guy that they send to break down the door is the wrongest guy for this job. Like, Worf, lead the team to open up this door, is sort of a terrible order to give. They should know better.
Cruel, cruel irony.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get Shimoda.
Yeah. You too, buddy. What do we have coming up on the next episode, Ben?
The next episode of the show is season 6, episode 13, Aquiel. Geordi is enamored with a beautiful and mysterious Starfleet lieutenant accused of murder. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
Geordi LaForge always falls for the wrong woman. Geordi, you can't love me. I've been accused of murder.
The first gold Juan Ortiz signed card I have is from Aquiel.
Is this person a robot person that Geordi falls in love with?
No, I think she's like a real babe, but is she like not around?
How is she in the Globes department?
Adam, in a probe.
Geordi's not a Globes man. I think we all know that.
He's a calzone man.
Yeah. Yeah. Big into those calzones. Stuff that crust, Geordi.
Oh. We're turning into assholes, Adam. Yeah. I don't like this.
Cut that out. Cut it all out. You know what? This is one of the episodes that people warned us about when we vetoed Rascals. Or I should say, when I vetoed Rascals, they're like, you guys, Aquiel's coming up. You're not going to like
this
that.
Episode, I thought.
Well.
Am I wrong? Am I misremembering?
I would never say you're wrong on this program, Ben, until the mics turn off. So I guess we'll find out if our viewers' inclinations are correct on this one.
That will be our next episode.
Speaking of inclinations, Ben, if any viewer is so inclined to help support our show, they can do that by going to MaximumFun.org/donate. You can also support the show by buying an aforementioned P1 message. We've got merch items on the website, the Topatico site. Got a couple of shirts. Got a glass.
Got a great Junk Shimoda glass. Should probably start working on the next thing. We have a few cool submitted designs from viewers, so it might be one of those. Who knows?
Time to get cracking on that, I think.
Yeah. Well, we should thank Dark Materia for our theme music and Adam Ragusea for much of the other music you hear on the program. We should thank great folks over at MaximumFun.org. If you'd like to crack wise online about the show, use the hashtag GreatestGen on Twitter. Adam is at Cut for Time, and I am at Benjamin R, AHR. There are also great and lively Reddit group, and Facebook group, and the Greatest Gen Wiki on wikia.com. So all of those are great resources and or communities.
Did you ever think we would be a podcast with 14 different pages of internet stuff? It's pretty amazing.
It's a, yeah, we should have our own page at some point so that we can point in the direction of all of those.
Yeah, you know what? It's great that, like, the internet structure that is the best for our show are places that our viewers have constructed on their own. The yeah. one place that we've made ourselves is garbage.
If you'd like to know about our upcoming tour, sign up for our mailing list. It's gach.biz/mail. And with that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and an episode of The Greatest Generation that is going down for a murder rap unless Geordi LaForge has something to do about it.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.